A few moments to talk today with the violinist Lara St. John. We're reaching her in Manhattan. So, Lara, before we even move on to anything involving your artistry or the new recording or anything else, you and yours, we hope, are well as we speak today.
Yes, we are all fine thus far. Obviously, it's a bit of a trying time everywhere. But yeah, New York's been particularly hard hit, and unfortunately, some musician friends have died at this point, and that's pretty hard to take because then it really brings it close to home. But at this point, everybody's just hunkered down inside, and everybody's just got their fingers crossed. And it's actually kind of enheartening to stick your head out the window at 7 p.m. every night. I mean, it is like it's almost like a stadium, the amount of cheering that happens for the health workers.
Are people making music, too? We've seen this in some of the European cities where folks have taken to balconies and open windows and so forth to share a song here or an instrumental something or other there. Has that been happening in and around your neighborhood as well?
Not that I know of. I think New York has rather less balconies than Spain and Italy, which makes it a little bit harder, I suppose. But yeah, everybody does definitely stick their heads out their window and cheer, and all the cars like toot their horns, and it sort of sounds like every day at 7 o'clock that we won some kind of huge football game or something.
good to have that unity, certainly to bring us through some of the trying times. Violinist Lara St. John in Manhattan. And as we move here to talk about your brand new recording that is coming out, I wonder if we could look back, and maybe that's not such a bad thing to look back to childhood when we weren't dealing with all of this, and perhaps a composer or a teacher or a piece. Was there something very early on that touched you, Lara, that brought you to the art form?
Well, I started violin when I was 2 and a half, so I don't necessarily remember the very beginnings of it, because I think I started talking at about the same time. So for me, it's a little bit like a language, I suppose. But when I was a kid, I'm Canadian, so we always had the CBC on. And of course, when I was little, Glenn Gould was still alive. And he was a kind of a big influence on me growing up, I would say. And he generally played a lot of Bach, so I grew up with that Goldberg Variations and the 1982 when that came out, Goldberg Variations, and you know, his toccatas and all the preludes and fugues. And so I'd say that was a pretty big listening influence on me for sure.
Were there teachers then that picked up on that passion of yours and brought others immediately in, or a further growth into the music of Bach? Talk a little bit about some of that that earlier musical development then as you were coming along and beginning to work in private lessons with teachers and the like.
My brother's also a violinist, we met the Cerrones, David and Linda Cerrone, when I think I was 4 and my brother was 6. And we were playing in some little local competition that Mr. Cerrone was judging, and he gave us 100 out of 100, which I'm sure wasn't the case because we were 4 and 6, but it was very sweet of him. And that was when he said, you know, you should be coming to Cleveland to study with me and Linda. And we got some help from a foundation in Ontario to make monthly trips to the Cleveland Institute. And I think that's what violinistically sort of propelled us to the next level at that point. And then we just did a lot of things very young. I did my European debut at 9 years old, and I went to a college, I guess, in Philadelphia at 13. And I mean, I was a sort of a college graduate at 17. And that sounds more impressive than it is, in my opinion, because I mean, somebody who's graduated from Harvard or Yale, like, they're not just good at one thing, they're good at lots of things. But for music, you know, you just have to be good at one thing. So I don't know, it's easier to be a college graduate at at 17 if you're in music than it is if you're just a ordinary smart person.
Speaking with violinist Lara St. John, and you talk about this very early development on the instrument, and I read in the notes here too where you say, quote, "I'm a bit of a strange violinist when I was a kid, supposed to be learning all of these normal works that folks do. Instead, I was learning Bartok and Debussy, also tackling the Beethoven concerto and the 10th sonata." So it brings us kind of in line to the fact that you are featuring a Beethoven sonata on this new recording that is titled The Key of A. And along with that, also the Franck, pieces that you've worked with for a long time, or are these more recent additions to the repertoire? Talk about how these two are paired up in this new recording with Matt Herskovitz, your pianist and accompanist here.
Yeah, well, actually, I did come by them rather late compared to, I mean, they're such pinnacles and standards of the violin repertoire that it's quite funny that I didn't actually, I don't think I even touched the Franck until about 15 years ago. Which, you know, at which point I was already in my early 30s. So that's a quite late time to learn such a standard piece. And the same for the Kreutzer Sonata. And I learned them, I played them a couple times, and then just kind of set them aside. I was sort of sitting around waiting for the right moment and the right pianist, I think. And when it came to the Beethoven especially, you know, back in his time when he would have been playing it with Bridge Tower, and even later when Liszt played it with other violinists, there's no way they wouldn't do variations on the variations, for example. You know, improvisation was still very strong in people at that time. It became a bit of a lost art. And so, of course, because Matt is also a jazz pianist, it was really fun to sort of not have the later traditions in that and go back to the actual classical era and do real variations on variations. And just, you know, over years and years of this being standard repertoire, there's a lot of preconceptions that people have about these pieces. And with Matt, it was great because he had never played them before. So he, except with me, he learned them with me. And we tried everything. Let's try it this way, let's try it that way, until, and there, like all of these traditions that have been baked in to the way people teach it and the way people play it, we're just sort of thrown out the window. So we just do exactly what it is we think works with these pieces. And that's why I wanted to put them together.
Well, we note that the pieces not only are on this CD that is now coming out, but also you were scheduled to later this month be giving them in concert. I wonder, obviously everything has been completely turned on its head, but with this this particular Beethoven, did you have, and are you still kind of trying to rearrange any plans to venture into more of Beethoven's music during this celebratory year for his 250th birthday, or how, that's sort of the specific question, but to look at it in broader terms as to what the present situation has done, not only for your plans to record, but your plans to give concerts, and how all of that now is sort of, as we said, been turned on its head.
Well, concert going and giving is, turned on its head, and sort of, I guess we're a bit at an impasse for the moment. I mean, I'm hoping that come September that season comes back to life. But in the meantime, I'm trying my best to do the best with the time that I have. I mean, I'm not one of these people who's sitting here learning a new language and a new skill and, you know, all these happy things that people post online. Some days are good, but I think like everybody else, there's other days where I just sit and watch Netflix all day and kind of go like, oh my God, the world is ending. So sometimes it's hard to be productive all the time. But I certainly hope that before Beethoven's big birthday is over, that we're back out there playing his stuff.
Are you one that has gravitated to contemporary composers and commissions? And by that, I guess I'm wondering if you've, at least during these strange times, been able to talk about anyone of where some of the inspirations may come from. We know that that monumental events certainly lead to artistic expression. And it seems like, even though it's been a relatively short time, I wonder about where some of that inspiration might be fueling those that are looking to create art, specifically music, from the situation that we have been living through so far.
Well, you know, there's that meme online that, you know, well, when the plague happened, Shakespeare wrote King Lear and all this kind of stuff. So I think it's probably best to not expect oneself to write King Lear. But at the same time, I think it is giving people some sort of inward looking into themselves, and that can be a good thing for composition. I have a new violin concerto that from Martin Kennedy that that I'm learning at this point, because I don't know when it's going to ever be performed. But that was a recent commission, also a concerto by Matthew Heinsohn. I'm doing an online thing for Violin Channel where I'll do some stuff by Melissa Dunphy and Gabriella Lena Frank for solo violin. It's called Concert from the Living Room. And I'm also actually gonna, in that thing for Violin Channel, there's some traditions of accompanying oneself, like in Acadian music and Cape Breton stuff from Canada, where one accompanies oneself with one's feet. And it's actually kind of quite a lot of fun, and it comes from when there was just one musician, and so you had to be everything, sort of a one-man band. So I'll do a little bit of that as well. And, I mean, it's funny how there's an old English adage that says, if you want something done, ask a busy man. And I feel a little bit like we're all kind of like, how do I have so much time and yet not have any time? Yeah, I mean, I've noticed, obviously, I think we're all spending a little bit more time online. And I've been looking at the reactions to this whole terrible situation of the disease. But with musician friends, and a lot of them are like, oh, you know, like, I feel like I should be accomplishing this, that, and the other, and all I can do is sort of sit in bed and stare at the ceiling, because it is hard to sort of have all this stuff going on outside you, especially here in Manhattan, and then just think, oh, I'd like to create something of incredible beauty. So for me, at least, I'm also a video editor. So I've been trying to cheer people up with videos of my giant lizard and things like that. So for me, it's more trying to help people in certain ways just by somehow raising their spirits. And if that comes from music or comes from videos of iguanas, like, reacting well to Bartok and badly to Brahms, so be it. But, you know, it's still something. It's creating something and putting it out there and trying to help, because I think we all just feel so helpless.
Well, understanding that you can find some solace not only in your art, but the company of the pet iguana, regardless of its musical tastes. Laura, it's been a real pleasure. And the work of Franck and Beethoven and Kreisler on the new CD with the pianist Matt Herskovitz. And certainly we will look forward to enjoying this, because it is art that's available to us now. And we will look forward to, we hope, your return to the concert stage and future recordings as we all move forward, and especially during the trying times. Thanks so much for being gracious with your time, and we wish you not only further wonderful art, but also good health. Please do stay safe, and thanks again for joining us.
Well, likewise. Please stay healthy also. Thank you.